from our microphones in downtown Washington, D.C. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes, back with the National Organization for Victim Assistance with Dr. Will Marling, the Executive Director of NOVA, and Sean Mosh. She is a victim of fraud, but she turned that victimization into positive action. She is now with Scam Victims United at www.scamvictimsunited.org. But before talking to Will and talking to Sean, I want to thank everybody once again for listening, watching, and reading the materials that we have at our website at media.csosa.gov, DC Public Safety, radio, television, transcripts, and blog. We are up to 200,000 requests on a monthly basis for everything that we do, and we are extraordinarily appreciative of everything that you're providing us with, even the comments as to how many times I screw up, or ideas for new programs and directions in terms of where we should go, and meaningful conversations in terms of the comments log. You can log into the website, again, media.csosa.gov, or you can email me directly at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, dot Sipes, S-I-P, not T, P-E-S, at csosa.gov, or you can follow us via Twitter. That's twitter.com/LenSipes, L-E-N-S-I-P-E-S, no break in those words. Back to our program, Dr. Will Marling, the Executive Director of NOVA, and Sean Mosh, the person basically in charge of Scam Victims United. And to Will and to Sean, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thanks, Leonard.
Well, I'm going to start off with you. How does the National Organization for Victim Assistance get involved with this issue of fraud? And, it's pretty apparent to me. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, National Organization for Victim Assistance has been around for decades. At the very beginning of my stint in Washington, D.C. 30 years ago, there was the National Organization for Victim Assistance. When I worked as a senior crime prevention specialist for the Department of Justice's Clearinghouse, they also gave me the Victims Beat, which I knew nothing at all about, and the folks at NOVA were wonderful in terms of instructing me. And now we have Dr. Will Marling, who is now in charge of NOVA. How did we get into the scam and fraud issue?
Well, I tell you, we have a victim assistance line, Leonard, and you know our expertise is primarily in violent criminal victimization and identity theft. But we get a lot of calls on this line, and of course, when people are looking for assistance, they see victim assistance, and we get sometimes a wide range of victim calls. But fraud victims call. Well, is there any angle, opportunity, remediation? What do they do? And while that's not our area of expertise, we felt it important to start looking for at least some resources. We want to be able to at least hand them something. And that's when we had the opportunity to connect with Sean Mosh and Scam Victims United. And she's a great resource, and the website's fantastic. It's a real, real useful tool.
Is there any difference between identity theft and scams and frauds? It's all pretty much the same thing, correct?
Well, no. I mean, you know, it all depends on the nature of the victimization, of course. Identity theft, you can have your identity stolen and never even know about it. The average identity theft discovery is 12 months, maybe, with a victim. With a scam situation, you know, you're engaging in something and you believe that it's an ethical, reputable approach, and then you discover that it's not. There's deception and this kind of thing. So there are different dynamics to it, and Sean's situation is even more irritating. She can tell you about that, but especially when people think they're getting something that they're not actually, you know, that's fraud.
Absolutely. Now, there goes, I think I'm a perfect example of where I did not know. I mean, I've been in the business for 40 years, and I'm having a hard time distinguishing between identity theft and fraud. So, there's probably lots of people out there who may see, maybe they're as dumb as I am, and they see these issues as being one and the same. I mean, in essence, you know, we're concerned with burglary, we're concerned with theft, we're concerned with robbery, but, you know, much more money leaves our pockets through ID theft or through fraud and scams than through garden variety street crime, correct?
Well, you know, statistically, some of that's hard to track. You know, we have uniform criminal reporting, and a lot of that is related to, the violent criminal side of things, which is horrific. But, you know, from the financial side, the emotional impact can be significant as well when, you know, people take your earnings and something you've been saving for, or sometimes people end up losing quite a bit and end up having to try to recover that. But, you know, at the heart of it, it's an attack on us personally. And it really steals something from us emotionally many times, traumatically. And that's why we still emphasize that. We recognize that certain outcomes from physical violence are different, and we as an organization are still committed to supporting violent criminal victimization folks who, you know, have that need. But we definitely see the growing, increasing demand on supporting fraud victims, because it's there. And in the economic situation we're in, you know, these perpetrators are looking for every angle to line their pockets with more money.
And we're going to do our very best today to stop them. Sean Mosh, victim of fraud. Tell us a little bit about that story and what brought you to create scamvictimsunited.org or scamvictimsunited.com.
Well, back in 2002, my husband and I were selling a 1961 Buick Special that he had owned since he was in college, and we didn't have a place to store it anymore, so we were selling it.
Mm-hmm.
And put an ad online, got some people that were interested. There was one person that sent us a cashier's check to pay for the car,
mm-hmm.
and also to pay for shipping the car from us to them.
Right.
And we brought the cashier's check to the bank, and because we didn't know this person at all, we said to the bank, you know, we're selling a car and we want to make sure that this check is good. You know, I don't want to ship the car off or start using the money from this check and find out later it's bad and then we're left whole. And they said, oh no, it's a cashier's check, those are verified as good in 24 hours. No problem. And
right.
I said, wait, verified as good in 24 hours? That seems a little fast. And they said, yeah, because cashier's checks process faster.
Right.
24 hours, that's all you need to wait.
I thought a cashier's check was as good as cash. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's the other thing, that, you know, oh, they're as good as cash.
Right.
So they assured me it has been verified, it was good, it was clear, the funds were available. And I said, okay. So we went forward with the transaction. So part of that money was for shipping the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that we gave to the person that was going to take care of that transportation.
Right.
And then the other part was for the sale of the car, which we kept.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 week to the day later, the bank called us and said the check was counterfeit.
Mm-mm-mm.
I said, well, what does that mean for me? Because you already told me it was good, it was clear.
Right.
You can't unring that bell.
Right.
And they said, that means you owe us the money.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean I owe you the money? You told me it was good.
Right.
I wasn't going to touch the money.
Until you told me it was good.
It was good. And
right.
It was clear. And
right.
It was verified.
Right.
You told me it was. What did I do wrong? And actually, once we got talking with their legal department, my husband even asked them, and this was now days after we had found out it was counterfeit,
mm-hmm.
and he said, how long does it really take for a cashier's check to clear? And they put him on hold and then came back to the phone and told him, 24 hours, sir.
Mm.
And we said, well, wait a minute. If that was accurate, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
It is.
So, what is the real time? And they were never able to give us that information. So basically, I was upset. I started talking about this to anyone and everyone that would listen. Started a message board. And through the message board, we found other people that this was happening to.
Mm.
So at first, I thought it was just my bank's policy was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I started to look at it, I found, no, it's the banking system. The banking system will tell people the check is good, it's clear, the funds are, they make the funds available in 24 hours before the check has been honored by the issuing bank. So now you can use and spend that money, and then it could be 7 to 10 business days later that it comes back as counterfeit, and then you are liable for all that money.
And how did you? How did all this make you and your husband feel?
Oh, we were very upset.
Yeah.
So we started talking to the media, and once it started to get in the media, we got even more people that were telling us, oh, happened to me. Oh, same thing. So then we started the website, Scam Victims United.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in early 2003.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 2 years of our website being operational, we helped stop over $2 million from going into scams.
That's amazing. Now, what? Okay, so you hold the key then for the rest of us to tell the rest of us what not to do.
That's ironic that you use that phrase because I did a presentation called Education is the Key.
Right.
So we can all hold the key.
Right.
Education about scams and fraud is the key.
But every day we are confronted with these scams. And I remember being on my computer and being three quarters of the way through the statement from my bank. And it just struck me. Again, I've been a senior crime prevention specialist for the federal government. I've been involved in the crime prevention arena for a decade. I've been in the criminal justice system for 40 years, and I was within a keystroke of sending fraudulent information through a phishing scheme. Any one of us could fall for this. I was on Gmail the other night, and you know, the scams that run on Gmail seem to be every single day. This is amazing. I mean, we are under attack.
We found the way. Yeah. Every time we think we, got the word out about this scam, they're going to invent another one.
And they look so legitimate.
Yeah, so many of them. Like, they use the logos and all the right letterhead, and, you get the check. The bank managers can't even tell by looking at the check if it's good or not.
That's amazing.
So this is what I always tell people, that if you are sent a cashier's check or money order, because they're also counterfeiting money orders and traveler's checks, if you're sent any one of those for payment for anything, something you're selling online, a donation to a charity, payment for a room you're renting, if you are sent cashier's check, money order, traveler's check, and then told you need to wire any money to anyone, It's a scam. They will go as far as doing on Craigslist. They'll go out there and find somebody who's renting a room. They'll say, yep, I want to rent your room, send you a cashier's check for the first month's rent and deposit. Then once they know you've deposited the cashier's check,
right,
they'll say, oh my gosh, something happened. I'm not going to be able to move in with you. I'm so sorry. I have to back out of our contract.
Wow.
Can you just wire me back the money?
Wow. That's amazing.
This is the thing I get all the time. So many people would say, well, I wouldn't be dumb enough to wire money to somebody I don't know. But in that situation I just described, if you were renting out a room in your home to someone, and then they emailed you and said, my mother passed away. I had to stay where I'm living to help out the rest of my family. I'm going to have to back out of our contract and not move into your room. I know I already sent you $1,000. Keep $100 for your trouble and inconvenience. Wire me back the rest. Wouldn't most people go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Yes, of course. I'm going to send you your $900.
Right. Okay, well, what are the three major things as consumers, as regular everyday people, that we can use to prevent this sort of thing from happening to us?
Well, like I said, if you're sent any sort of check, cashier's check, money order, and asked to wire any portion of it to anyone for any reason, I don't care if their grandma died and their house fell down on top of them and they need the money. Don't.
It's a fraud.
That's the first thing.
Okay.
I mean, it absolutely, 100%, every single time I've ever talked with a person, and that is their situation, it is a scam.
Okay, give me another.
Again, like you were talking about, with the phishing scams, never ever click on a link in an email. If you get an email from your bank that says that there's a problem with your account, call the customer service number to your bank and talk to a real human being.
And don't call the customer service number listed on that email, right?
Yeah, you can't, call the phone number listed in the email because that might be redirected to the scammer.
Right.
Who's going to tell you, oh, yes, we need your information.
Right.
You know your bank. You bank with it every day. Pick up the phone, call their local number. Same with credit cards where they say there's a problem with your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Flip over your credit card, look at the back. There's a customer service phone number. Call that number and say, hi, I got an email saying there's a problem with my account. If there really is a problem with your account, their help center will be able to pull it up, and there'll be a big flag on your account that says, yep, here's the problem we need to fix.
But even with the example that I gave a little while ago with Gmail, all they're asking for is account information. And I'm saying to myself, well, they're not asking for my social security number. They're not asking for my date of birth. They're not asking for my home address. They simply want the account information. How could that possibly help them? And then I said to myself, oh, silly, everything in there, something in there, whatever it is that you use to sign up for it, provides them with access to practically everything else that you're doing. Don't do it. And I emailed it to Gmail, and they emailed back saying, yes, it's fraudulent. Don't worry about it. But what that does, there are so many of these frauds going on, it almost makes you wary of any official correspondence coming to you via the internet.
It does. And I've noticed that with myself, that every email I read, I kind of look at it and go, well, is this person really up and up? And I do my research now. Google is a wonderful resource. If you are in doubt at all, copy and paste the person's email address into a Google search.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have done this scam to somebody else, there's probably a post somewhere. We have had so many people come to our website because they did just that. They either Googled the name of the scammer, their email address, the company they said they were working for, or their phone number. And it brought them right to our website because so many people have posted, here's the name and information about our scammer on our message board. So then we're helping others to prevent the scams because they did the Google search and found the information.
We're more than halfway through the program. I want to reintroduce our guest. Dr. Will Marling is the executive director of the National Organization for Victim Assistance, long venerable and honored within the criminal justice system for the work that they do. You can reach the National Organization for Victim Assistance, www.trinova.org, www.trinova.org. Our other guest today is Sean Moss. She is a victim, but more important, she took her victimization and turned it into something wonderfully positive. She is the person who organized Scam Victims United, and it's www.scamvictimsunited.org or www.scamvictimsunited.com. All right. So basically, anytime you get a cashier's check, any check, and you're asked to wire the money back, it's an obvious fraud. Never click any attachment or an email asking for any personal information. Go back to your bank. Go back to your credit card company. Go back to Google. And just be suspicious of just about virtually any email request that you get. But I bet you people are scammed all the time by regular U.S. mail.
They are. The ones we see the most are the internet ones because most of the scammers are in another country.
Right.
And then the problem is you report the crime to your local police, and they can't do anything jurisdiction-wise because they're in another country.
Because they're in Russia.
Now, if Nigeria, the United Kingdom, usually,
Sometimes
Canada.
All right.
But Nigeria is probably, if I had to put a top three, it would be Nigeria, UK, and then Canada.
Mm. That's amazing. So I was overly stereotypical because I heard so much about servers in Russia, even if they're in other countries, being used for scams. But, you know, England and Canada, that's the and Nigeria, those are the three. All English Commonwealth countries.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And, yeah, with Canada, the big one was the Canadian lottery, that they would get a letter saying that they had won the Canadian lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to contact this person. Now, you might get that first letter of contact via snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, things like the cashier's checks are usually sent overnight, like FedEx. The reason being, the scammers know if they mail that counterfeit cashier's check in the U.S. mail, that's mail fraud.
Yeah, and there's a whole organization to
a delivery system, then it's not.
Okay. Understood. I mean, I get the British lottery scam every single night in my Gmail. When I open up my Gmail, the British lottery scam is there every single night.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it too. I get it sent to admin@scamvictimsunited.com. Now,
well, what is the larger perspective in all of this? Will Marling, Executive Director of NOVA, what is the larger perspective? Have we covered it in terms of our introduction? I would imagine, my guess is that this is happening 100 times more than burglary, even though we don't have hard data on it. My guess is that this is happening far more than street variety crime, and that this is a real issue, not only for this country, but for organizations like yours.
Well, sure. I mean, it's hard to quantify, certainly, because, you know, these spamming situations, they can send out 100 million emails, and then even a very tiny percentage of response is still a meaningful response for them, because
sure.
It's just the law of large numbers.
Right.
You know, our main concern is educating people like Sean does so well, because really, at the end of the day, a lot of it truly is common sense, and that isn't to minimize people or to criticize people who have fallen for this, because, to be honest, we've had people perpetrate on our organization for things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and sometimes, you know, you want to step forward and with an open hand, meet people and assume the best, but then you discover later on. But with a lot of these things, you know, it plays on certain intrigue that we all have, the opportunity maybe to get something for nothing,
mm-hmm.
with some of these phishing, you know, opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as that, many times it's just stopping and thinking. You know, does the bank need to ask you for all your personal information? Shouldn't they have it already?
Yep.
I mean, why would they need to verify all that?
But it's impossible, though, Will. I mean, don't you think? I mean, the situation with Sean, somebody handed her a cashier's check. If somebody handed me a cashier's check, and if my bank said, you know what, you're good to go, I would pretty much bet the farm that I'm okay.
Well, sure. And, you know, that's because you have a good relationship, at least at the time, with the bank, and you're trusting them. But again, you know, we're talking cashier's checks, and so it's an awareness issue. It's a consumer consideration to say exactly what's going on here. And to be honest, it's going to continue, I presume, at that level until the banks become more committed to educating consumers themselves and their clients, their customers, as to what truly could happen. I can't see any reason for the bank to say, we need to hold on to this. There could be a concern. That we have we see a profile, we see a pattern, and here are the steps we recommend you take. Let's work together on this.
Right.
But, you know, if the bank, because the bank just needs to recover their money.
The incentive.
Right.
Yeah, the bank doesn't lose any money. It's the customer that
That's
has
right.
to pay back. So if the bank was liable, you know there would be changes, that they would be making sure that the check is legitimate before a penny went out. And I have stressed to people that all it would have taken was for the bank to say the funds are available, but the check might not clear for 7 to 10 business days.
Right.
That
so don't let's not let's not touch the money until for the
scam victim.
Right.
Excuse me.
I said so. The bank would say, "Let's not touch that money until it does clear."
Right, but on a banker's stand, because I've talked with bankers on this issue, they say if you say every cashier's check that comes in, you have to hold it for 7 to 10 days, we're going to get pissed off customers coming in going, well, it's my money. I want my money now. You know, my brother-in-law wrote me that cashier's check in, so I know it's good.
Well, let them sign a release then.
Well, in that case, have a form that they sign
right.
that says, I'm releasing the bank of any
right.
liability. Yep. I understand that it might still come back on me.
You're... Go ahead, Will.
At least tell people that it could take 7 to 10 business days versus saying 24 hours, Google.
Right.
Right. I mean, all you need to do is hold on to the money. You know, my thing is, okay, it clears, the bank hands you the money. Well, hold on to the $1,000 for 2 weeks.
Right.
Because you can turn it back into the bank.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Exactly.
But people don't think about that. Naturally, we're trying to conduct our business and move forward. And if the people you trust, which is your bank, like Sean Singh, since she was 15, you know, the bank says, hey, you're okay. Well, you know, it's like somebody in the business saying it's okay. And that's what needs to change.
Well, it's sort of like the automobile industry years ago, where we, when in the crime prevention field, we knew that by computer chips and keys would virtually eliminate to a large degree. And now they can come along and tow the car away. But if you would have a computer chip and a key, that would eliminate probably 70% of automobile thefts. They've done that, and automobile thefts have plummeted. It's the same way with the banks. They got to step up and take responsibility, it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like
exactly.
to us, too.
Yep. Okay. Sean, we only have a couple minutes left. This program has flown by like wildfire. Give me a couple more tips in terms of what people need to do.
Again, Google is your friend. Google everything and anything. Go to places like our website. We have a message board where we update information on scams. You can do a search there. We're also on Twitter and Facebook, where you can follow our blog, where we'll let you know about the latest and greatest and newest twists in scams.
I'm going to do that.
Also, check out the Internet Crime Complaint Center. When we were talking about statistics and how much money is lost to scams, the Internet Crime Complaint Center keeps track of that kind of information.
Is that the FBI center?
They always say, excuse me?
Is that the FBI center? The Internet Crime Center that you just mentioned?
They are a coalition between the FBI, the National White Collar Crime Center, and a couple other organizations.
Okay, what's their website? Do you know offhand? That's all right. We'll go ahead. We'll go ahead.
Org, I believe.
Pardon?
It's Internet Crime Complaint Center is...
Okay.
The best place to go.
That's why I just Google that. People can get to it. All right. Do you have another one?
Exactly. Well, I was just going to say that even their statistics, though, and they will tell you this, too, are low because they know that not everybody reports scams and fraud.
Right.
Because most people will say, oh, I'm embarrassed that it happened to me, that I fell for it.
I was mortified when it almost happened to me. Go ahead, please.
If somebody robs you on the street corner, you would report it.
Right.
People who are victims of internet scams and frauds need to report that, too, so that we have accurate information of how much is being lost, so that we can encourage our lawmakers to change things to protect the customers. Because if we would have kept all that money in the U.S., the economy be doing a little bit better right now.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. Looking at it from an economic point of view, you're 1,000% correct. I wonder how many millions or billions are leaving the country every year due to fraud. We have a minute and a half left.
If just our website can stop $2 million in 2 years.
Wow.
You know,
okay, and I'll give out the website at the end of the program. Will, do you have any closing remarks?
Yeah, just to clarify, it's IC3.gov. IdaCharles3.gov is the Internet Crime Complaint Center.
Right, IC3.
That's the one we give out. And Snopes.com is also another site that collects scams, aberrant emails. It's SNOPES.com.
Okay.
And I think we're becoming more educated, there's no question, but, you know, you feel for folks who just don't realize... you know, what's down the pike. Whaling is another issue for even executives, where people do these people get information on the inside a little bit, enough to go through, say, an administrative assistant and forward on. And so the executive thinks that it's legit because the administrative assistant forwarded on. It all looks legitimate. So even within a company, you just have to be careful of your email. You have to know exactly who you're talking to and what they're talking about.
Well, we're out of time, and I do want to summarize what I've heard today is that if you're sent a cashier's check and you're asked to wire money back for whatever reason, it's a fraud. Never click on an email where they're asking for personal information. Contact the bank. Contact the credit card company. Every email request, be extraordinarily suspicious as to what it is that they're asking for. Google is a friend. One of the things I heard from Sean, Google that information to see if there's anything that pops up on the internet in terms of fraud information. You've got the Internet Crime Complaint Center, i3g.gov, and Will mentioned Snopes, SNOPES.com. And I do want to emphasize again, Sean's website, www.scamvictimsunited.org or www.scamvictimsunited.com. And once again, for Dr. Will Marling, the Executive Director of NOVA, it's www.trinova.org. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. 200,000 requests. We couldn't be successful unless we had your input, your suggestions and criticisms, and feel free to point out all the times I screw up. I am enjoying those. and again, for those of you who ask us questions that are outside the scope of the radio show, that's fine with us. We'll find help for you, so feel free to get back in touch with us if you like. Again, it's Leonard, leonard.sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at C-S-O-S-A.gov. Again, that's for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in downtown Washington, D.C., or follow us via Twitter at twitter.com/LenSipes. I want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.